From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Trump administration has updated the CDC's guidelines on reopening churches and other houses of worship to allow for choirs to sing. This in spite of the documented manner in which the coronavirus can spread through respiratory droplets, especially when infected people talk or sing. Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court is weighing the limits that states like California can place on churches, although California Governor Gavin Newsom capitulated to demands from evangelical leaders and President Donald Trump to allow limited reopenings of houses of worship. A San Diego church wants to be exempted from all restrictions. Right-wing pastors who want an end to the lockdowns say that churches are essential, effectively arguing that their right to congregate under cover of the First Amendment supersedes the threat to public health from the pandemic. My guest is Rob Boston, senior advisor at Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Welcome to the program, Rob.
Thanks for having me on.
So tell me first about the efforts of your organization, Americans United, at trying to inject some sanity into the legal battles over churches demanding that they be allowed to reopen.
Yeah, so we got involved in this right away, really, because as soon as the shutdowns started to occur in states, almost immediately, there were some houses of worship and some pastors who announced that they simply weren't going to follow these directives. Now, it's important to remember that these shutdown orders affected secular and religious entities equally. So if you couldn't meet for a baseball game or a stage play or be in a movie theater, you couldn't meet in a house of worship as well. So I say that because some of these religious leaders have been acting as if these orders singled out houses of worship, when of course they did not. They treated religious and secular entities the same. So as this went on, the matter began to go into court, and our legal team was active in filing a number of court briefs in a bunch of these cases, really just making the point that if you treat houses of worship in a special way, that really preferences religion in violation, we believe, of the First Amendment.
So the U.S. Justice Department has, of course, unfortunately, sided with some of these churches and made it very clear that they will investigate any allegations of violations of religious freedoms. And the Attorney General William Barr even sent a letter to California Governor Gavin Newsom saying that his phased reopening of the California economy discriminated against religious exercise. They're saying that churches are essential. So you were pointing out that even though churches faced no discrimination because you still can't, you know, gather for concerts or sports events, some businesses have been allowed to remain open, and those are, say, grocery stores, right, where people need to eat. So those grocery stores and some other types of industries were deemed essential. Churches say that their right to congregate and worship together is as essential as the right of people to go to the grocery store. How do you respond to that?
You know, so much of this discussion has become politicized, like so many things in our lives right now. Unfortunately, this is a perfect example with President Trump and Attorney General Barr weighing in on these cases. And Trump, of course, even before Easter, was, you know, saying that the churches should reopen, and he's reiterated that call several times. But the claim that, you know, a house of worship is the same as a grocery store or a hardware store or some other essential activity, it really doesn't hold up. And in fact, a number of courts that have looked at this issue have addressed that specifically. And they made the point that when you're at the grocery store these days, usually it's a real hit and run type operation. You get in there, you get what you want, you get out. You're not socializing, you're not hanging out, you don't go there for camaraderie. But a house of worship, a religious service, that is exactly a social thing. That's why, you know, part why people go, and there's always a lot more interaction, and they're longer events. Now, that isn't to say that religious services aren't important to people, because they are. But the fact is, many pastors around the country have found creative ways for people to still get together, whether that's a Zoom-based meeting or something else over the internet.
Right. That was going to ask you, do these pastors that are launching lawsuits that are pressuring governors like Newsom, do they represent a majority of religious leaders or are they a minority?
Oh, they certainly aren't a majority. They're a small minority, but they're making a lot of noise. And of course, they're backed up by these extremely aggressive, well-funded religious right legal organizations that are taking their cases into court. But if you look at the polling data on this question, it's not even close. There was a poll done recently, I think, by the Associated Press that found that only 9% of Americans, 9%, believe that there should be an unfettered right to in-person religious services right now. Everybody else thought that there should be no services at all or that there could be services as long as there was strict social distancing and other regulations overseeing those types of gatherings. So the number of people who agree with the right wing on this issue, it's really small.
Jerry Falwell Jr. has been vocal and has targeted, in particular, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, which is something that I know your organization has written about and pointed out. What did Jerry Falwell Jr. say, and how has he politicized this issue around the reopening of churches?
Well, it's important to remember that Jerry Falwell Jr. represents the conspiracy theory wing of the right-wingers. Ever since this began, he's been saying, well, first of all, he said it was an orchestrated effort to discredit President Trump. He made that argument, which you were hearing on Fox News.
That the entire virus was a hoax, basically.
Yeah, somehow. All a hoax, and you know, that the number of deaths were being overstated. He's still saying that, by the way, too, that they're inflating the number of deaths. I mean, he just embraces this whole bizarre conspiracy theory worldview. Lately, he's been bragging about how he's not going to wear a mask and that the real men don't wear masks. And he sent out this offensive tweet recently that showed him wearing a mask, but it was a mask of the Virginia Governor Northam in blackface from that incident that came to light last year. So he's definitely just trying to be provocative. But what's really, I think, most unsettling about that is that people listen to him and actually might think that he's got something to say here, when in fact, the entire medical community in the country is saying that the views he's espousing just are not accurate.
So Governor Gavin Newsom in California did allow churches and other places of worship to reopen as long as certain strict rules were being observed, including limiting the number of people that could congregate at a given time in a church. But did even this gesture seem to you to be a capitulation to the huge pressure that he and other governors are facing from this minority of people?
That's what's really remarkable about all of this. Newsom's not the only one. Governors in a number of other states have capitulated. They've caved in. They've allowed these types of meetings to be held. And even when they say, well, there should be social distancing and there should be oversight, the practical matter is nobody's checking up on that. In many cases, these types of rules were handed down almost as suggestions, not edicts. But if you look at a similarly situated secular venue, like a movie theater or a stage play or a lecture or something like that, if these types of gatherings had occurred in violation of the governor's order, believe me, there would have been a reaction. So I think what we're seeing here really is, it's yet another example of the religious privilege that permeates this society in many ways, how religious organizations, some of them, I mean, not the majority, but some of them, seem to believe that they're just above the law and they're going to do whatever they want.
Are you worried that the judiciary will back this idea of religious liberty, this version of religious liberty that these right-wing pastors are espousing? There was a federal appeals court that upheld the initial ban on church gatherings in California, but now the Supreme Court is weighing this San Diego church's lawsuit against Newsom. And of course, we know, unfortunately, the Supreme Court is becoming more and more giving the appearance of being a political body, even though it shouldn't be. And of course, the Republican Party has spent so much time and effort into appointing lifetime judges that are conservative at breakneck speed. So our judiciary may be becoming more and more biased towards conservatives. Can the legal system, the judicial system, even be relied upon to be a bulwark against this this kind of action.
It is definitely a concern. Now, the Supreme Court does have precedent in this area that it should look to, going back all the way to 1905, talking about the idea that public health concerns can temporarily override, you know, self-professed liberty interest. So if the court's going to respect its own precedent, it will look to that. But yes, you're right. We have seen the stacking of the courts during the Trump era with extremely conservative justices and judges at the lower level. And we're concerned about that. Now, having said that, our legal department has been following the cases that have been filed. And most of them are breaking the way that we would like. I think it's about 21 rulings upholding the rights of governors and other public officials to issue these rules, even if they affect churches. And then a smaller number, maybe 6 or 7, going in the other direction. So that they're breaking the right way, and we're hopeful that the Supreme Court will recognize the public health implications of this issue and bring that to bear at any decisions it may hand down.
And I think it's so important to emphasize that this is important because it's about public health. If churchgoers were only endangering themselves by congregating against the rules, that would be one thing. You could say, well, maybe they're choosing to go and endanger themselves, and that's fine. But every churchgoer who is exposed to somebody infected, who might be asymptomatic and they don't even know they're infected, will go back to their own communities and endanger the lives of their family members, who will in turn endanger the lives of other people. So that's a critical part of this issue, right? This is about public health.
Absolutely. I was really amazed in one of the cases from California. One of the churches asserted in a court document something like, well, you know, nobody here is sick. We haven't been exposed to this illness. Mm. Well, they don't know that. As you note, a person can be asymptomatic and quite capable of infecting others while displaying those symptoms themselves.
And there were churches and incidents of churches, especially in the early part of the pandemic, that were found to have resulted in infections or super spreader events, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we've been tracking that, and that's still happening. As some of these states move to open up, we're seeing some new flare-ups. Religious services, by their very nature, very, very communal events and the kind of places where people are close together, sharing items, singing through choirs and such, they are in some ways, and it doesn't give me any pleasure to say this, they're the perfect vectors for illness. So I think it does behoove the American religious community to consider that. And I want to point out again, there are a lot of religious leaders who have been writing opinion pieces and speaking out and saying, we're not going to endanger our community. We love our congregants. We're not going to move quickly to have in-person services until we know it's safe. But this small number of people who feel differently, you know, they're the ones that can endanger an entire community through reckless behavior.
Even if this minority of churchgoers and religious leaders felt that didn't care about the public health, don't they care about their own health? I mean, I'm thinking of another analogy. Say you find out your church has asbestos, and for your own safety, going into that church would be a terrible idea. Would you say, no, my right to congregate and be in this place of worship is more important? You can't violate the laws of biology.
Yes. Well, one of the unfortunate byproducts of the Trump years has been that people are just embracing their own reality. There was a situation in a town in Louisiana called Central, a city called Central, Louisiana, a pastor there named Tony Spell, who was one of the most defiant individuals, announcing that he was going to keep his church open, even busing people into the area for services with hundreds of people. A member of his congregation actually died of coronavirus. But he just insisted that the man hadn't died of that. He died of something else, in fact. So he's just embracing this alternate reality, and he puts that message out there instead. It's absolutely remarkable, but that's where we are.
So when it comes to the political reasons why Trump is, of course, pushing for churches to be exempted, he is in an election year. He's facing re-election. And right from the start, he has courted very deliberately evangelical voters on many issues, including abortion and this issue of so-called religious liberty, you know, allowing religious leaders to justify their treatment of LGBTQ folks and their discrimination of minorities. Is this part of the same political agenda to court evangelical voters ahead of an election?
I believe it is. There have been some polls lately that have showed actually a little bit of erosion among Trump's support among white conservative evangelicals. Now, not a large number, not a huge amount of erosion, but you know, in a close election, that could play a factor. So I think he's got it into his head for some reason that this particular segment of his base is really eager to get back to in-person services. I'm actually not convinced that that's the case. I think a lot of religious people, even if they're very conservative, are a little bit wary about doing that. But that's become Trump's reality, and that's why he's pushing that so heavily. As with everything he does, there is a political calculus behind it, absolutely.
So the religious leaders that are calling for reopenings are citing the Constitution. They're citing the First Amendment as protecting their religious liberty. But the Constitution also has something to say about the separation of church and state, right? And does that play into this conversation around reopening of churches?
I think we have to remember, of course, that religious freedom, as precious as it is not an absolute right. You cannot engage in activities that endanger others. I can't say that, God told me to seize your house and move in there because I got a message from God. You know, you just can't take those extreme measures. So there's always going to be a limit on how far you can go. You can't expose people to injury or to death in the name of religion. Obviously, there are various controls there. So that's one factor. And the second factor is that the government is supposed to treat religion just as it treats similarly situated secular entities. It's supposed to be neutral on these matters. It isn't supposed to grant special favors or special status or preference to religion. When houses of worship are told that they can meet and they can open up and they can have services, but nobody else can do that, that is, in fact, a form of preference. And I believe that's a clear violation of the First Amendment.
What do you foresee happening? Are there legal battles now that we should be paying attention to, aside from the California case where the San Diego church is suing the state and it's going to the Supreme Court? Is that the main case? I know that your organization has filed amicus briefs in a number of cases around the country.
Yes, the California one is one people are kind of looking at this moment because the Supreme Court may say something about that. But, you know, there are others out there. There are other cases in the pipeline. I think inevitably one of these will reach the court. Now, whether that will happen, you know, during the active time of the pandemic or at some point in the future, it's hard to say. But this is the sort of issue that it's important enough that I do think the high court will take it up.
And as states are reopening, you know, one could even argue that many states are reopening because they're feeling the pressure from this vocal minority of anti-lockdown protesters and the Trump administration. But as they are reopening, whether it's a phased reopening or a very extreme reopening like the state of Georgia, we're likely to see a second wave of infections. That's what all the scientists are pointing to. Those people, the epidemiologists, infectious disease experts, are predicting a second wave of infections. And it seems as though at that point, we may likely start to see more, sort of second wave of quarantines as well. And it seems as though at that time, those same churches will likely speak up and make a big fuss and make a big noise, right?
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, I think we're fated to keep just fighting these battles because these pastors, again, this minority of religious leaders, have demonstrated that they're simply not going to listen to public health officials. They're not going to listen to science. They're not going to listen to the experts. They're going to do what they want to do. And, you know, nobody wants to see extreme measures, but at the same time, we do want to protect our citizens. We want to hit the balance right, protect everybody's individual freedoms, individual rights, but understand that your right to worship can't be used as a club to endanger others.
And finally, there are ways in which churches and religious leaders have responded appropriately, right? You mentioned the majority remained closed. There have been creative ways to do online services. Are you heartened by the fact that there are a majority of religious leaders that do understand science applies to them and do respect that they don't need to demand special treatment because, you know, it's in the good of the public safety and public health?
Yes, and I think that's an important point. I've read some really compelling op-ed pieces and other types of writings and social media postings by pastors who are making the point that they're not going to do anything that jeopardizes the congregations that they serve and the people they love. We've talked about the Zoom-based churches and internet and services over the radio, services on television, outdoor services, people driving to services but not getting out of their cars. There are ways to do this, and I think the American religious community is creative enough to exploit those ways without endangering anybody's lives.
Give out a website, Rob, where people can find out more about the work that your organization does.
Absolutely. It's real simple. It's au.org. So au.org, and visit and come see what we've got to say. I think you'll like it.
Thank you so much, Rob, for joining us today.
Thank you.
My guest has been Rob Boston, Senior Advisor at Americans United for Separation of Church and State, online at au.org. We've been discussing how some religious leaders have demanded that their churches be deemed essential during the pandemic. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.